here to Numbers 25, that relationship is really on the rocks and is struggling. And even in the chapters just prior to this, Numbers chapter 22 through 24, God has reiterated that He will not curse Israel. He will only bless them, especially when other nations are coming against them. But there's still a disconnect when we get here to chapter 25 because of the people's disobedience. And begin reading with me. Numbers chapter 25, beginning in verse 1. While Israel lived in Shittim, the people began to whore with the daughters of Moab. These invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel yoked himself to Baal of Peor, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, "Take all the chiefs of the people and hang them in the sun before the Lord, that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel." And Moses said to the judges of Israel, "Each of you kill those of his men who have yoked themselves to the Baal of Peor." And behold, one of the people of Israel came and brought a Midianite woman to his family in the sight of Moses and in the sight of the whole congregation of the people while they were weeping in the entrance of the tent of meeting. When Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, saw it, he rose and left the congregation and took a spear in his hand and went after the man of Israel into the chamber and pierced both of them, the man of Israel and the woman, through her belly. Thus the plague on the people of Israel was stopped. Nevertheless, those who died by the plague were 24,000. Now I want to pause here real quick because we're not going to address this too much during the sermon, but just know that at some point during Israel's disobedience, God sends this plague and it kills 24,000 of them. We don't know the details of it. We don't know what it was. But we do know from other scripture references that God sent this plague on the people. And the congregation of people was suffering because of their choices. The plague was sent because of their disobedience. And it didn't stop until this young priest named Phinehas took this bold action and he executed these two people. And it pleased God. And listen to what God says in verse number 10. The Lord said to Moses, "Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the high priest, has turned back my wrath from the people of Israel, and that he was jealous with my jealousy among them, so that I did not consume the people of Israel in my jealousy. Therefore say, behold, I give to him my covenant of peace. And it shall be to him and to his descendants after him the covenant of a perpetual priesthood, because he was jealous for his God and made atonement for the people of Israel." I want to talk to you this morning about sin. I want to talk to you about its effects. I want to talk to you about its consequences. And I want to talk to you just about how we need to view sin, because stories like this, I think, are hard for us to understand, aren't they? It's puzzling as to why God is so angry to the point where He is okay with people being executed, being stuck on poles, and being stuck out in the sun to die. It doesn't make any sense in our minds for God to be okay with something like this, does it? And yet here's God not only approving of the actions of Phinehas, but applauding him and saying, "I am going to make a covenant with this guy forever." This is one of those stories, I think, that just kind of makes us question the nature of God and what we really know about God. And I think that as you read through the Old Testament, if you've ever done a Bible reading through the Old Testament, there are some things that God does that are really puzzling. Like whenever He commands the Israelites to go out and to annihilate these other nations, to plunder everything that they have, to take their land and live in it, to destroy their women and their children. And I think as you look at the Old Testament and the Old Law as a whole, it can leave you walking away with a very challenging picture of a God who is dogmatic and a God who is definitive in His expectations. And while I don't think that this is a completely wrong view, in my opinion, I believe we struggle with this picture of God because of our view of sin. The anger of the Lord that we see on display here towards Israel wasn't because they were acting ignorantly. It wasn't because of some unknowing sin. They were boldly and willfully challenging what God had told them to do. They're making a choice to live apart from God. And so let me tell you something you already know. Sin, by definition, is anything that separates us from God. And sin and God are fundamental opposites. And so the presence of sin cannot allow for the presence of God in the lives of His people. And as we know from the Genesis account, God's purpose in creating mankind was for relationship and God's purpose for choosing Israel and for blessing Israel and for protecting and for providing for Israel was to demonstrate his desire to have a relationship with the people that he created. And so you can see how a willful choice to live apart from God would make him angry. Now I'm going to guess, I haven't told you anything you don't already know, but we need to take seriously what sin does to our relationship with God. Recently at this church, we've had some studies in 1 Peter, and in from my lessons here in the pulpit, we've referenced Paul's comment in Romans regarding Old Testament stories such as this one. And he says, what was written in former times was written for our learning. And so what I want us to do this morning is to see that this was a story written about God's people then for us as God's people now to understand the ugliness of sin. Because stories like this should cause us to take pause and consider the nature of God and consider how he views our actions and the presence of sin in our life, because it could be a matter of life and death. You know, these two people that committed bold and willful sin, it cost them their life. And those 24,000 people that disobeyed God, it cost them their lives. And so just as a disclaimer, let me say this. I'm not saying that I think God will strike us down with a plague when we sin, or that God is okay with us executing this type of judgment on people that are caught in immorality. I think this story is a figure for us today of just the horrible consequences of sin. But I do hope that we see this morning from this lesson that sin is destructive, and it can do significantly more damage to our lives than we realize. And so in order to understand God's attitude toward this specific situation, let me back up and put a little bit of context around God's relationship with Israel. Again, this all happened after God had brought Israel out of Egypt. The 10 plagues, the parting of the Red Sea, these people had seen all of these things. God had provided, protected, and helped them. And after he did that, he came and God made a covenant with Israel. In Exodus chapter 6 and verse number 7, God came to them and said, I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God who has brought you from under the burdens of the Egyptians. In Exodus chapter 23 and verse number 13, he says, pay attention to all that I have said to you, and make no mention of the names of other gods, nor let it be heard on your lips. This covenant that God had enacted with Israel, it was formed upon his promises. He came to them and he said, look, I'm choosing you. Here is what I'm going to do for you. You can know exactly what I'm going to do for you, because when I tell you something, it's going to happen. And all I'm asking you to do is to listen and to obey and to trust me. And the law was given in order to define exactly what that looked like. And when I say exactly, you guys know what I mean. If you've read Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, God told them exactly what he wanted them to do and what that covenant would look like. And I'm just going to give you a snippet of the covenant as it pertains to the story. I put it here on the board. God came to them in Exodus chapter 22. He says, whoever sacrifices to any god other than the Lord alone shall be devoted to destruction. But then listen very carefully to what he says here in Exodus 34. He says, take care, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land to which you go, lest it become a snare in your midst. You shall tear down their altars and break their pillars and cut down their asherim, for you shall worship no other god. For the Lord, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God. Lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land. Listen, and when they whore after their gods and sacrifice to their gods, and you are invited, you eat of the sacrifice. And you take of their daughters for your sons, and their daughters whore after their gods, and make your sons whore after their gods. Now this is God specifically telling them, I don't want you to do this. Now look back to Numbers chapter 25, our text for today. And you'll see that Israel's actions were in direct violation of that covenant. They did exactly what God told them not to do. Specifically what God told them not to do. Their actions weren't just sinful, but they blatantly ignored what God had told them not to do. I mean, chapter 25 and verse 6, these two people come walking right through the camp, right in front of all the people who are sad for their sins, and they're coming to God saying, we want a relationship with you, and yet here they are, acting as if nothing is the matter. Blatantly disregarding what God had told them. The scriptures that reflect on this event in Deuteronomy and in Psalms make it very clear that God sends this plague because of their disobedience and unfaithfulness as a nation. And I bring this up because it wasn't as if these two people were the only ones that were sinning here in Israel. There's a general attitude of ambivalence towards sin in the nation, and it needed to stop. And it needed to stop now. And that's why I think God is so pleased with the actions of Phinehas, because he said, what y'all are doing is wrong, and it's sinful, and it's separating me from you. And God wanted to shake Israel up to see that they weren't listening to him. And so while the actions of Phinehas directly affected just these two individuals, it was this attitude God was trying to provoke everyone towards, because they'd become callous. They'd become ambivalent towards the problem. They didn't have the right attitude towards sin. And again, for these people in this situation, it was a matter of choice that separated them from God. And the reason God is angry, God cannot bridge that gap. And here they are, nobody is doing anything about the sin except for Phinehas. It says, I love the language here, when Phinehas the son of Eleazar saw it, verse number 7, he rose and he left the congregation and he took that spear in his hand. As soon as he saw it, he says, I'm done with this. We are done with this. This sin is not going to last in our camp. I'm taking care of this right now. He knew it was wrong. He knew it wasn't pleasing to God. And he knew what God wanted. And let me emphasize this. The action that he took wasn't merely some act of passion. This was exactly what God had called them to do. Chapter 25 and verse number 4, take all the chiefs of the people and hang them in the sun before the Lord, that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn. And then Moses, as he communicates that to the people, he says, each of you kill those of his men who have yoked themselves to the Baal of Peor. He did exactly what God had told them to do. This wasn't just Phinehas saying, well, I'm mad that you guys have made us suffer and this sin is bad and it's affecting me. No, he wasn't doing this on his own volition. He said, I'm doing whatever God tells me to do. This was for the good of God and for the glory of God, because Phinehas saw sin for what it was. It was separation from God. And he said, that's exactly what we need, is to be reconciled to God. As Moses recounts this event, and many other ones like this in his memoir of Deuteronomy, there's two recurring phrases that are used that I believe are especially applicable to this story. He reminds the people to hear and to fear what the Lord has said, and to purge the evil from your midst. Multiple times, Moses encouraged the people, hear what the Lord has to say, hear what the consequences are, and hear what happens when you don't follow God. And he gets very specific about how this principle gets applied, to the point where he says, if you've got a child who's insubordinate and you have disciplined that child, you need to execute that child so people will hear and fear and know that God does not stand for that. He uses this to emphasize the importance of putting away sin. He says, purge the evil from your midst so it wasn't allowed to fester and degenerate the people's relationship with God. Moses encouraged the people to hear and fear and purge the evil for the purpose of honoring God and putting his word, his will, and his desires above everything else. And I think that's what we see here in the actions of Phinehas. And I think this is why God says, behold, I give to him my covenant of peace. Because he was jealous for his God and made atonement for the people of Israel. I think an episode like this is incredibly important to us today, because it highlights the attitude that we must have towards God and the value that we must place on our relationship with him, and the attitude we need to have towards sin. Because I think we see from this story that sin is always ugly. And that it has this snowballing effect. My father-in-law likes to talk about sin in this way. He says, sin always takes you farther than you want to go. It keeps you longer than you want to stay. And it costs you more than you want to pay. You know, the Israelites didn't just wake up one day, I'm sure. They didn't just wake up one day and say, hey, let's go chase after these other gods. I'm sure there was a time when they thought, man, God is awesome. I'm going to do whatever he says. You think after they crossed the Red Sea and they saw what God had done in destroying that army, they said, that's our God. That is our God, and we're not following anybody besides that. They didn't just wake up one day and decide to walk away from that God. It all started with their discontent. They started grumbling and they started looking at the things that they didn't have, and they started saying things like, you know, we're out here in this wilderness that Moses has brought us to, and you know, didn't we at least have good food to eat back in Egypt, and didn't we at least have graves that they could bury us in when we die? And they were discontent with the things that they didn't have without realizing all the things that God had done for them. And they harbored these feelings and they harbored these attitudes in their hearts, which made that next decision to ignore what God had to say that much easier. And it created more separation from God. The very definition of sin, they were just separating themselves from God by these decisions. And the farther they got from God, the easier it was to make other decisions. I'm sure they got to looking at the people in the land who worshiped these other gods, and they had good lives, and they said, well, you know, they're doing something right. We ought to just worship their gods. But what had happened in rejecting God's way was they created a path that forced them to find the best option for their lives apart from God. And while we can see clearly that worshiping other gods was wrong, sacrificing to these other gods, sacrificing their children to these other gods, that's clearly wrong. But because of this paradigm they had created in their minds, they had rejected God and His Word. They had no other option but to continue down this path. You see how sin has this snowballing effect? As you walk away from God, you have to make these kinds of decisions. And their actions were a result of their decision to sin the very first time and not do anything about it. And so appreciate with me the seriousness of the very first sin. Again, I'm not talking about unintentional sins. I'm talking about when we know the right thing to do and we just don't do it. We find ourselves in those situations a lot of time, don't we? Where we know the right thing to do, and we just don't do it. And I think it's because we have this wrong view of sin. You know, sometimes I think we view sin kind of like a smudge on our shirt, or like I drop ketchup on my shirt. And man, that's really not a great thing. But here comes God with His Tide pin of grace, and He's going to come, you know, dab on it a little bit, and sin's going to be gone, and we can hang out, and we can just have a good time with God. You know, it's not that big a deal that sin is there. God can still exist with us. But I don't think this is what this story teaches us about sin. I think the reality is, sin is more like us going into our dirty clothes hamper and digging out those clothes that we worked out in last week that stink, and they're nasty, and we put them on, and we go out into a public place, and we expect for people to hang out with us, but nobody wants to be around us because we're nasty, and we stink, and that's never going to change until we take off our clothes and we take a shower, right? That's what sin is like. In the same way, God cannot be around us when we choose to allow sin in our lives. But I think it's much more serious than this scenario that I've even painted. God's holiness is diametrically opposed to sin. And so sin pushes God farther away, and the longer it lingers, the farther away we're getting from God and this relationship that we need with Him. What we see from this story is that Israel's unwillingness to listen to God is called sin, and it's called a whoredom, in order to paint a very ugly picture of life separated from God. You know, from the very first time that they made this choice, it was sin, and it was ugly. But they didn't recognize the effects of sin until it was too much for them to bear. Do we appreciate the seriousness of sin? You know, there's always consequences for sin. Sometimes they're immediate. But if the consequences for sin aren't immediate, do we view sin the same way? I think because of our imperfection in the flesh, we all have sin. You know, 1 John talks about that. He says, if we say we have no sin, we're a liar and the truth is not in us. But the focus of our lives should not be merely to accept that fact, but to identify sin by listening to the voice of God and having a mind to close that gap that sin has created in our lives. And brethren, I think far too often we allow sin to linger by excusing it away. We say things like, oh, you know, I really shouldn't have talked to that person in that sort of way, but they really deserved what I said to them. I was speaking the truth, wasn't I? And they really deserved it. Or we say things like, they got what was coming to them. Or we say things like, I can't help it that I act that way or that I think that way. I know I shouldn't worry, but I can't help it. I know I shouldn't say this or that. And then we come up with whatever excuse we can come up with. But brethren, that's sin. If we know the right thing to do and we don't do it, that is sin. And oftentimes, we justify our clearly sinful thinking and our clearly sinful actions in the name of fairness, in the name of habit, or based on some sort of natural inclination, as if someone else's sinful actions justify a sinful response on my part. We're making excuses. Let's just be honest with ourselves and call it what it is. It doesn't change the fact that when we make these kinds of decisions, it creates a space in our relationship with God. That's the reality. When we know the right thing to do and we don't do it, it separates us from God. And when we choose to let sin linger, it usually snowballs into a situation that we cannot control and that we never wanted to be in. Let me give you an example. If I worry, if I allow myself to worry about insignificant things like what I'm going to wear today, what I look like, what other people think about me, what I'm going to make for dinner this week, before I know it, I'm worrying about bigger things like how I'm going to pay my bills or trivial things like projects at work or just worrying about things that I have zero control over. That snowballs into worrying about things that don't even matter, but more significantly, I'm not growing in my trust of God, and I'm not able to see His control in all things. And do you know that Jesus tells us not to worry? He says, don't worry about your life. And yet sometimes we ignore that word from God. Let me give you another example. If I allow myself to look at things on the TV, or on my computer, or on my phone that are inappropriate, even if it's just a lingering glance at an attractive person or an inappropriate situation, before I know it, if I allow myself to do that, before I know it, my Google search history will be filled with these inappropriate things. And it will be easier to justify looking at pornography or engaging in inappropriate relationships. Let me tell you, brethren, people who cheat on their spouses, they don't just wake up one day and decide to leave their spouse. It starts with seemingly insignificant sins that are allowed to linger in our lives. We cannot excuse even the most insignificant sins, because they will only lead us to a place that is away from God. Israel found themselves in this situation because they made that first sin, that first choice, and they didn't do anything about it. And when we get here to Numbers chapter 25, they are in an extremely bad situation that they have no other choices. I mean, really, their back's against the wall here. There was only one way to deal with their sins, and it was that they had to do what God said, and they had to do it now if they wanted things to change. They were instructed to hang the elders and the son before the Lord. Phinehas took a spear and drove it through these people who were clearly opposing to God. Because of the situation the Israelites found themselves in, they had to take extreme measures to eradicate sin. And I think for us, sometimes extreme measures must be taken to eradicate sin from our lives. Now, let me say this. Sin must always be taken seriously. I don't want to give you the impression that I am okay with sin in the smallest form. Sin must always be taken seriously, but we must especially be intent if we have let it get out of control in our life. If we get to a point where we realize, I have an addiction, or I have a problem, I have this thing I'm struggling with, and I know it's not right, brethren, we need to take extreme actions, and we need to get rid of that from our life. If we learn nothing else from the story of Phinehas, it is that there's nothing too extreme when it comes to dealing with sin. He saw very clearly the blatant disregard for God's command, the consequences for Israel's rebellion, and he knew it needed to stop. And while running a spear through somebody might seem a bit gruesome to us, that's what God asked. That's what God said, you need to do this to get rid of the sin. What are you willing to do to eradicate sin in your life and to sanctify the Lord in your life? You know, sometimes we find ourselves in these situations that seem bleak, or we just feel like there's no way out, when the reality is, we're just not willing to do what we need to do to get rid of sin in our lives. And you know what Jesus said about this, about how far we ought to go? Jesus said, if your eye causes you to sin, pluck that thing out. Get rid of it. He said, if your hand causes you to stumble, cut that thing off. It's better for you to go through life without those members than to be cast into hell for all eternity. That's what Jesus said. Does that sound extreme to you? There is nothing too extreme when it comes to eradicating sin in our lives. Flip over to Colossians chapter 5 with me. Colossians chapter 3. There are not five chapters in Colossians. I know this. Colossians chapter 3. And while you're turning over there, let me just say this. I'm not proposing that we have to cut off parts of our body to escape sin. I'm not saying that we have to kill someone to eradicate sin, but the type of attitude we must have towards anything that stands between us and God is that we need to put it to death. And we are told here in Colossians chapter 3 to put ourselves to death in a spiritual sense. Read with me, and beginning in verse number 5, Colossians 3 verse number 5, put to death therefore what is earthly in you: sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming. That's a key verse. We'll come to that here in just a second. Verse number 7, in these you too once walked when you were living in them. But now you must put them all away: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and obscene talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices, and you have put on the new self, which is being renewed in the knowledge after its Creator. I think verse 6 is really key here. He says, these attitudes, listen, brethren, these attitudes as we're reading, any of those step on your toes? Verse 6 is key. He says, on account of these attitudes and these things that we're harboring in our lives, the wrath of God is coming. And so what Paul is saying is that putting these things to death is for our own good. And God's wrath is on those who harbor these kinds of attitudes and allow themselves to justify these sins. He says, put to death what is earthly within you. And so we need to consider very seriously the things included in this list. If you struggle with sexual immorality, impurity, evil desire, this means if you struggle with the things that you look at, with the things that you allow to hang out in your mind, whether it's from movies, magazines, pornography, if you know you struggle with these things, he says, you need to get rid of these things at all costs. Listen, brethren, if you struggle with pornography, how far are you willing to go to eradicate that from your life? Would it be too far to say, I need to get an accountability partner? I need to get a computer program that blocks those things from my computer? Would it be too far to say, I need to get rid of my computer? I need to get rid of my phone? These things are dangerously prevalent in our culture, and there is nothing too extreme when it comes to our fight with these sins. We must put them to death. If you struggle with malice, slander, obscene talk, meaning if you struggle with gossiping about others, or with controlling your words when you get emotional, you need to identify these sinful things in your life and you need to kill them. I think one of the least talked about sins in the entire Bible is gossip. And yet it happens all the time, doesn't it? Of course, it's not us. It's never us whenever it's gossip, right? Wrong. It's always us, right? It's always gossip when you're talking about someone in such a way that causes them harm. And it's not for the building up of the body. That is gossip, my friends. And we need to be on guard for who we talk about and how we talk about them, because gossip is sin. And so to get rid of this, maybe this means we just need to learn how to keep our mouth shut. Or maybe this means we need to get rid of some of our friends or be careful about the situations that we allow ourselves to be put in. Because sometimes we have people that encourage these types of actions in our life, don't we? And maybe we need to put these people out of our life. Whatever the case, there is nothing too sacred to keep us from being close to God. And brethren, I know we all have things that we struggle with, and we know what those things are. We need to read lists like this, and we need to say, I need to put to death those things in my life, those bad attitudes that are separating me from God. If you struggle with covetousness, idolatry, meaning if you want what other people have, you're jealous for their stuff, their relationships, their abilities, whatever it may be, if you struggle with these attitudes, how far are you willing to go to get rid of these things from your life? And Colossians chapter 3, this is by no means an exhaustive list. There's other lists. Ephesians chapter 4, we've talked about that one a lot. But if we're honest with ourselves, we could probably find something in this list that we all need to do better about. And we need to take it seriously, because these are things that separate us from God. And as God's people, we're called to be holy, aren't we? We serve a holy God who has called us to be holy as He is holy, and we need to strive to set ourselves apart. And sometimes that means we need to be like Phineas, and we need to destroy things in our lives that do not honor God. There can be nothing too sacred, nothing too valuable in our lives, and nothing too extreme to keep us from being close to God, because nothing else matters. We see from the way God responds to the actions of Phineas that God blesses those who honor Him. Not just in their words, not just in their actions, But in their actions and in their obedience, Isaiah, as he was writing about God's people, he communicated God's displeasure as he said, these people, they honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. I think what we see from Numbers chapter 25 is that God's wrath was stayed because Phinehas did exactly what God asked him to do. It wasn't that Phinehas did some great, magnificent thing, and I don't even think it was necessarily about the actions that he took. It was about Phinehas saying, I'm going to do what God told me to do. And that's what Israel's whole covenant was based on. We read this verse earlier, Exodus 23 and verse 13. Pay attention to all that I have said to you. That's what God's relationship, His covenant relationship with Israel was all about. And although our covenant relationship with God is a little bit different, it's spelled out a little bit differently than it was back then, at the root of what God has called us to do is honor Him by listening to Him and walking closer to Him. And when we do things that God has not asked us to do, when we wander away from listening to God, that does not honor God. We need to take very seriously the things that God sees as serious, and we need to honor God in the way that He desires to be honored. Peter encourages us in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15 to sanctify the Lord in our hearts and always be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us. And since we've been talking about hope this quarter as a church, what is that hope that we have? The hope that we have is that God is faithful and that God has promised and that when God speaks, it's never going to change. And so we sanctify the Lord in our hearts by knowing what to Him and using what He says to eradicate these things in our lives that separate us from God. And I think this is why God feels so strongly about sin and why He appreciated the extreme actions of Phinehas. Phinehas wanted nothing more than for God to be the focal point in his people's lives and for him to be honored by his people. And for this reason, God blessed him. And God will bless us if we do the same. He will bless us with peace that passes understanding. He will bless us with confidence and with contentment as we look to Him as our source of life. And He will give us the hope we so desperately need in our lives. Listen, brethren, if we're going to honor God, we must take sin seriously. And we must, above everything else, sanctify God as holy, as we strive to be holy ourselves. And so just as a way of application, I want you to think about, does this attitude describe your life? I think we all know that sin is ugly. But are we just giving God lip service? Or are we truly striving to be a holy people? Separate. Different from the world. Do we look like everyone else outside this building? Are you honoring God with your life? You know, it's more than just claiming the name of Jesus Christ. Honoring God means we represent Him accurately and we represent Him obediently. Because just like the covenant God made with His people then, our covenant with God is based on His promises, and it's based on our willingness to obey. We got to be people who put God above everything else, who sanctify the Lord in our hearts, in our actions, in our speech, in everything that we do with our lives. And that means we identify sin, and we stop at nothing to get rid of it. Brethren, if you know of something in your life that is not right this morning, you need to identify it and you need to crush it by the Word of God. Don't ignore it. Don't excuse it. Identify it and crush it by the power of God. Isaiah wrote, though your sins be as scarlet, He can make them white as snow. That is the power of God in our lives. When we identify sin, when we take it seriously, when we draw near to God, we become more like Him. We become closer to Him. And we live fulfilled lives that God intended us to live. Listen, brethren, if you need to confess sin, you need to do it this morning. You need to do it now. Maybe it's in a public way that you need to do it, or maybe it's just in a private way. Whatever it is, please consider your life. Consider your heart. Consider the motivations of your life and live for God. Live closer to God this morning by eradicating that sin in your life. I'm going to be down here at the front. If I can help you in any way to do that, come and talk to me while we stand and while we sing the song.